Blog Talk Radio.
What's the matter, Glenn? You smoke like your grandmother.
200 meters down, a desert wind in view. A shot of fireball, one reading turned to screw. A 40 ounce of steel and silver and the ice will brew. I'm so bored, I'm doing nothing, but I got nothing to do. The forest of the Boilermakers, act around, is there anything? The forest of the Boilermakers, time to knock a bat.
Hey, Turnbuckle Turmoil fans, QT and Sun Guy with you once again here on a Sunday afternoon. Real fast before we jump into things, if you're looking for wrestling, PTW happening today in Paris, Kentucky. You have Blue Collar Wrestling happening in Portland, Oregon, like usual. And you can find myself later this evening in Richland, Washington for Reactivate Pro Wrestling. And without further ado, I want to welcome today our guest. He is from the great state of Washington, wrestles for a number of promotions up in our area. Jack the Snack, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure to have you on here. And since today is your first time with us, we'll start you out with the traditional first-timers question. How did you break into the wrestling business?
Well, that's a very long story since I started really long time ago, but the Cliff Note version was basically like a lot of kids in the early 2000s. I got into backyard wrestling, and that promoted into purchasing my own wrestling ring, and we ended up being able to get together with the fellows over at 321 Battle in Seattle, and back when it was SSP, and kind of made a ringed wrestling scene in Seattle, and that kind of helped go from just simple backyard wrestling stuff with my friends into doing actual shows for crowds and stuff like that. So that's the early days of it.
Now, when you started your training for professional wrestling, what was the training like at that point?
For me personally, when I got into it, it was, like I said, I was doing it with some friends just in the backyard, and a lot of it was watching old tapes at WWF, WCW, and just kind of self-teaching, you know, imitating what we see in a little makeshift ring we had up in Arlington, Washington here, and just trial by fire, you know, figure it out as you go kind of a thing, and that kind of progressed to that on about a weekly basis.
Obviously, you know, there's been advancements in training since then.
Oh, yeah.
Now, things like training and actually the business in general is a physical business just by its nature, which means there's going to be injuries along the way. Everybody that's been in the ring for any length of time has had the occasional injury, be it a minor one or a major one at times. What injuries have you had to overcome so far during your career?
For me, and I don't know if this is just based on my size, because I've always been a larger fella, I've encountered several noteworthy knee injuries over the years. A couple dislocations and a hyperextension between left and right knee. And then the most recent fun one was finding out how awesome cracked ribs feels back in December. So that was exciting.
There is a team bad knees for sports entertainers that have bad knees. You might want to pick up an application.
Apparently I will.
Now, another part of the wrestling business that has always been there, and it's just by the nature of the business, it's always going to be part of it, is the traveling. sometimes wrestlers have to travel fairly decent distances to get to their bookings. Just that's what wrestling is all about for the most part. What would you say has been the longest road trip so far that you've taken to wrestle?
I haven't had the opportunities as a lot of the guys have, but even as recent as just last year, I made probably a dozen or so trips up to like Surrey and Vancouver and BC to work with some of the friends I've made along the way up there. So it's not exactly going over to Europe or anything like that, but you know, 4 or 5 hour car ride, things like that.
4 or 5 hours is a decent trip, I think.
And a border, you know, different country, so I'm international, I guess.
Absolutely, nothing wrong with that at all. Now, another part of wrestling is the fans, and wrestlers have good experiences with fans, and they have terrible experiences with fans. That's just the nature of the business, again. Every wrestler has that one memory that was really special for them with their fans if they've been in for any length of time at all. What would you say are some of your favorite memories that you've had with the fans?
For me, the one that comes to mind is that I actually had a fan bring me something that they saw online. I believe they just found it on Amazon, but it was effectively a big circular pizza flag. And it was the first time I'd actually had a fan bring me something as like a thank you for being, you know, entertaining to them. And I ended up working that into my entrance attire for Battlemania a couple of years ago. So that was pretty special. I found her afterwards and she was in tears about being able to see me wear what she had brought. So that was a cool little thing I got to share with that fan.
For the listeners that may not be unfamiliar, Battlemania is essentially 3-2-1's WrestleMania, and they have that at the Showbox. Generally, it's a huge show. So for that fan, that would be like if, say, John Cena were to take a gift a fan gave him and go to the ring at WrestleMania with it. So definitely a cool moment for that fan as well.
Yes.
You talked earlier about having a wrestling ring, and oftentimes when wrestlers have their own ring, they will drift into eventually promoting wrestling shows themselves. Is promoting your own show something that you have ever considered before, or is that something that you don't really have an interest in doing?
It's something I've been interested in ever since I bought that ring. It's actually had that ring for over 12 years now. I bought it in mid-2007, so it's seen its fair share of time. So, I mean, in a way, I used to put on I helped run the backyard promotion that I used to be a part of, and that was great and all, but that was never for-profit. There was no fans. It was just kind of doing it for your buddies wherever you could put it up. But I mean, I'd love to put on at least a show here or there, maybe for milestones or celebrations and things like that. Just a few months ago, I did a child's birthday party, and that was kind of a cool little event, very, very niche little thing there. And something like that would definitely be interesting if the opportunity presented itself. But shows regularly, I'm not sure that's in the cards, but I'd love to feel around and see if that actually worked itself out somehow.
If you do have a show or two from time to time, I'm licensed in the state of Washington if you need me.
Sounds good.
Now, pro wrestling, especially right now, has a lot of different styles that can be used to entertain the fans. You have everything from the hardcore deathmatch type of style to the British submission and mat-based style to the Lucha Libre style to the Japanese strong style to more traditional mat-based styles. You have the comedic style of wrestling. There's so much out there right now, and a lot of them are doing very well. A lot of promotions try to do a niche product to cater to one specific type of style to draw those fans of that style to it. A lot of smart promoters try to incorporate all of the styles into their shows. What would you say is your favorite style to watch and your favorite style to perform?
I got to say the thing that got me into wrestling originally, because I only got into it in like the late 90s. So as far as people who are wrestlers, I didn't grow up with it. So it was big to do like the cruiserweight division was pretty fast paced and kind of energetic to watch, and it still is today. So I mean, despite the fact that I'm not able myself to do fast paced cruiserweight kind of, you know, flying around and, you know, high risk high reward kind of thing, that's always been one that always fascinated me. You know, if someone like Ricochet was in the ring, or, you know, AJ Styles, things like that, that they're always really fun to watch because they have, like, they're very well balanced. They can do power move, they can do quick base, so that kind of thing always stuck out to me. It's something I really liked watching. However, I mean, it's sort of obvious with what I bring to the table, but I've always been a fan of performing in a very comedical way, and if I can involve the crowd in any way, that's even better. Just to bring them from out of the seats to into the show, I always felt was really giving back to the fans and stuff like that. So I always love doing comedy spots, however cheap and fulfilling that might be to them, but it always seems to go well for me. So
that's definitely a needed spot on any card, I think. Now, with the comedy spots and the comedy wrestling, a lot of promoters don't see a value in having comedy. Some of them put a lot of comedy in their shows. Some of them shy away from it. With doing a lot of comedy in what you do, have you found that helps or hinders potential bookings with you, or does the promoter not necessarily go strictly on what style you use when they're considering you for a booking?
I feel like it's kind of hit and miss. I've worked with promoters that have asked me to dial it back quite a bit. Other ones, a card might be full of other like wrestlers, so it would be kind of a, hey, make sure you're not, you know, doing too much of the same thing. So it's definitely been something that runs into. I feel like of all the styles, especially the ones that you listed, it probably gets the most hate on it. But a lot of people like your Joey Ryans of the world can make a real go out of having a comedical shtick, if you will, and really letting it take them to fame. So, I mean, there can be a different strokes for all sorts of different folks out there. You just got to know your audience and know your promoter. So if you got to wrestle more serious on some nights for some crowds, that's just the business.
Absolutely, for sure. Well, I am scheduled to be at Reactivate Pro later today, so I need to get going. But my co-host QT Vokes is here, and he's going to lead you through the rest of the interview. And I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to seeing you in the locker room again very soon.
All right. Thanks, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. QT, take it right away.
Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, Jack.
How's it going?
Not too bad. Pretty good. Jack, how did you do in the Rumble match at the June 15th Strawberry Festival in Marysville?
Oh, that one actually has very good memories for me, because I actually happened to walk out as the victor in that match. So I'd say I did fairly well.
Ooh, okay. Can you tell our fans who you faced?
Let's see. There was, ironically, I did have my tag team partner in there with me, which was TJ Robinson. Weekend Warrior, CJ Edwards, Goblin was out there. We had the giant Nick Price. We had the Bad Cops coming down from from Seattle, which was Officer Dean Cooper, as well as I think Nurse Black was in there. JB Moonshine was in there. So quite the array of talents from all over the Pacific Northwest showed up.
Wow, kind of like the who's who. JB Moonshine, huh?
Yeah.
Now, was Pa Moonshine also there?
I do believe he was. However, he didn't step in the ring, so I didn't get a chance to tussle with him.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, Jack, have you yourself ever sampled the contents of the moonshine jug that Pa Moonshine sometimes brings to the ring, and he exhorts his wrestlers to shine up? Have you ever tasted the contents?
I have not, and me and TJ recently did step in the ring with the Moonshiners. TJ was unfortunate enough to get misted in the face with whatever is in that mystery jug there, so he might have been able to answer that question, but I can't imagine it's anything too fan-friendly for the kiddies or anything like that, because I've seen the way it makes those boys react, so yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Do you know if Goblin has sampled the contents from the moonshine jug? Because he sometimes spits a mysterious liquid.
I am not aware if he's actually partaken in said jug or not himself.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Jack, is it true that you put marshmallow peeps on your pizza at Easter time? There's a rumor going around that you do.
Well, I can settle that rumor right here and now. It is definitely a delicacy. You just have to be smart enough to get the pineapple-flavored peeps, and then it will really offset the flavor of the pizza and really make it shine. So I indeed do bring in the festivities with peep pizza.
Wow, now pineapple peeps. Okay, are there any other flavors that you put, any other flavor of peeps that you put on the pizza besides pineapple?
When it comes to the flavored peeps, I'm a little bit of a purist. I do enjoy them off pizzas, but there's a surprising number of them out there as far as the flavors of peeps
okay.
go.
All right, for our Turnbuckle Turmoil audience, can you list your top four flavored peeps of all times? And probably pineapple was number one, so you've got three other flavor of peeps. Can you tell us your favorite?
Well, one of them would probably just be the original marshmallow and sugar. I don't know if that's supposed to be a flavor or not. But the blue raspberry and the root beer are definitely up there as far as my top four, I would say, rounded out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
If I have my choice, I also prefer the bunny over the duck or the chick or whatever that's supposed to be. I guess it's a chick. It's probably a chicken, yeah. Yeah. I for some reason, go to the bunny. I don't know why. I just like biting the ears off. It's just a weird nostalgia thing I've done since I was a child, since I was a wee
okay.
ball of bunny.
All right, I'm going to log that down in our logbook that you prefer the bunny over the chick. Okay, very good. Okay, well, Jack, where did you get the idea for the name Pizza Party? Where did that come from?
That one's pretty easy. When I met TJ, he was a very party-centric individual. So with him being very into partying and me being very into pizzas, it kind of just seemed natural to take everyone's favorite work day or school holiday and make Pizza Party into our tag team name.
Okay. Now, on a personal level, do you prefer Godfathers over Domino's?
You know, I haven't seen a Godfathers in a while, and Domino's kind of went through like a resurgence recently, so just because of how easily I could get Domino's, I'm gonna favor them. It's probably been about 8-9 years since I found a functional Godfather's pizza around anywhere. So
I believe there was one down in Auburn, Washington, a Godfather's.
Yeah, that was the last one I found, and that was, like I said, like 8 or 9 years ago. And I went because that was the only one I'd seen in over a decade, probably.
Okay, do you prefer Round Table Pizza over Godfather's? Round Table.
It's one of my it's one of Mrs. the Snack's favorite pizzas. So yeah, we frequent in there quite a bit. It's not too hard to get to. There's one I believe in Linwood, so about 20 minutes south of us. So when the mood hits, we'll take a small road trip to enjoy said Round Table.
Oh, okay, all right. And now, for the record, can you tell us what your top three favorite toppings on the pizza is for you?
For me?
Yes.
I've been a fan of the pepperoni as the original, hence the attire. A big fan of the meat lovers, so like pepperoni, Canadian bacon, and sausage. And then despite everyone or half of the internet, I'm always been a big Hawaiian pizza fan, so. Whether or not disapproving to the fans or not, I've always, you like what you like. It's one of those things.
Okay. I'm going to go with myself with Italian sausage, then Canadian bacon, and then fresh tomatoes.
Yes. I've only had fresh tomato on one pizza, and it was not bad. It was a little pop of surprisingly sweet because it kind of caramelizes, it seems like.
Ooh, okay. All right. Well, Jack, do you know the identity of the llama who appears at CPW events and especially at Marysville? The llama.
You know, I don't know the identity, but I will tell you that whoever he is, he is my hero because he's able to light the crowd up with just a simple costume and you know, I respect that. As anyone who can say that just a simple appearance can turn the crowd in your favor, I'm a fan of that. So whoever he may be, he's doing God's work.
Well, I think it would be huge if at CPW events you could have a slide projector and then have a short film of llamas playing on that slide projector. You know, like in the mountains of the Himalayas, the llamas. Yes.
That'd be something. Yeah, we got to work on that. I agree.
And there's a lot of children that come to the CPW events who have never felt llama hair. I think it'd be great if llama himself could tack some hair onto a costume and let the kids feel the llama hair. Yes.
Yeah, I've heard alpaca fur is one of the softest ones out there, too. So, I mean, I'm sure that's kind of like his cousin or something. So, I bet it would work nonetheless. But, yeah, it'd make very soft ring attire.
Oh, okay. Yes. I mean, I think there's a lot of wrestlers throughout the career that would have loved to have a ring padded by llama hair or alpaca to cushion the landing. Yes.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, Jack, until 2014, Subway's bread contained the chemical azodaprionic carbonate. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong. Azodic carbonate, a chemical that can be found in yoga mats. And this also appeared on an episode of The Simpsons. My question is, do you yourself do DDP yoga as a workout?
You know, I actually own the discs and have put that on my list of things to do. I don't know how public it is out there, but I've actually been on quite a bit of a personal challenge to tuck back some of the old bread basket there. So I've actually been down personally with just some diet and cardio down about 30 pounds in about 3 months. So I'm making quite a little dent, and I have on my list of things once I get my cardio and all that kind of stuff going is to actually get the DVDs out and dust them off and roll out my my Subway yoga mat there and try to get my stretch on. Maybe that'll help with some of those pesky injuries I kept walking into. That could probably help reduce some of those likelihoods in the future.
Wow, not bad, not bad. I know that that Simpsons episode I was talking about, the lunch lady at Bart's school was seen grinding up yoga mats and putting it in the school kids' food. It's a famous episode.
Simpsons seems to have done everything anyone can think of.
Yes. Wow. Okay. Now, on a side note, a side question, do you feel a little bit of difference on the pressures on your shins and knee joints once you have lost that 30 pounds? Do you feel a little bit lighter and less pressure?
I feel lighter, but I went from being very sit around the house to get to the size I was unhappy with to moving around and exercising a little bit more. So it's actually currently quite the pain on my joints, but I'm working through it and not letting that hinder whether or not I do my daily calisthenics or not.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Jack, do you know that McDonald's is visited by 90% of American children on a monthly basis, and that McDonald's is the world's largest toy distributor?
You know, I did not know that, but it's not very surprising. I did, however, hear some time ago that Lego is the largest tire manufacturer in the world. So that also caught me by surprise. That's a fun little fact to carry around instead of remembering math from high school.
Oh, wow. Yes. And here's a question. What high school did you go to, and have you been a native Washingtonian all your life?
Oh, I was born and raised here in Washington, and I went to Arlington High School up here, just a little bit north of Everett, a little bit north of where I currently am. I'm in Marysville right now. So.
Oh, okay. Now, do you frequent Who's on First Sports Cards in Marysville?
You know, I do not. I was never actually a sports fan, as ironic as it is. Never got into football, basketball, baseball, any of that stuff. I had coaches in high school asking me to play on their football team and wrestling teams, but I was really never a big sports guy, more of a sports entertainer, apparently.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, Jack, did you have a name for your backyard promotion? Did you put a name to that?
I was in a couple of them. The first one that I broke into the scene with was Lakewood Wrestling Organization, or LWO, which was, ironically, I think they just stole the graphic for the Latino World Order and just used that. But later on, a few years after that, I had actually, the one that I said I co-ran and bought a ring with was a hybrid of two groups from the area that was Beyond Extreme Championship Wrestling. It was BXCW. And we did that for a good probably 6 years or so. About half of that with the ring, half of it was, you know, on mattresses, on the ground, on a trampoline, whatever we could get our hands on to, you know, try to hopefully not kill each other. But, you know, it was good. It had its fun, and it lasted there for a bit.
And what year, can you give us a ballpark figure of what year that you set up that first ring in your backyard?
It was June of 2007, I think. Late June.
Okay.
When we actually got it. Yeah. The first time I had been in a pro ring was actually up in Vancouver for VCW, another backyard group that I know, that I still know, but they've also disbanded. They would have annual supercards or whatever they were called back then. It's been a while, but that was 2005, and yeah, that was the first time I actually stepped into an actual working ring, as opposed to the LWO boys and I had built one up with just some plywood and lumber that was laying around, and you know, threw some carpet padding and tarps on there and just made it look functional, but really it just hurt like hell and you couldn't use the ropes.
Oh, okay. All right.
But it looked legit. However, that thing broke several times while using it, so the repairs on that were also in the high numbers of times.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, do you have any DVDs of any of those backyard performances laying around?
I have a plethora of BXCW DVDs because we got into it and we started trying to convert the tapes into digital with like a Dazzle software or something that was, you know, convert analog to digital. And I had created a bunch, like, I think I went online and bought like a 50 stack on like probably Amazon or something back in its old days. And tried to create a bunch of these in order to distribute to our workers, to our guys, but no one seemed too interested in buying them. So I still have like 30 copies of like 12 different shows before I just stopped making them for them. So I have them. Where they are currently, I don't know, but I know that they are around in my house somewhere. Yeah.
All right. Now, when you first began these backyard wrestling sessions, did Aaron Bolo or Damon James happen to drop on by? Aaron Bolo.
I want to say Bolo may have once, but I'm not 100% sure. We had a guy who was friends with a couple of the guys in TCW, and since we were right here, I think it was in Everett when I first got the ring, is where we had it set up, was at my cousin's place. And I know we had someone come by and they used it once, but they wanted to use it like solo, no one else can watch them or something like that. So it was very like, well, we're not really going to benefit from you just using the ring by yourself and, you know, having a chip on your shoulder. So that was a short-lived relationship between that. Otherwise,
okay.
I can't remember any of them, you know, sticking out and doing it, but it was really in the infancy of me, you know, being in the scene when I just thought this was just going to be, you know, a couple of years with my friends tooling around. I never really thought I'd get as far as I am or have the staying power that I do, because a lot of the guys I started with have all moved on, stopped wrestling a decade ago, so I'm one of the last holdouts that I'm aware of.
Well, now you talk about staying power and commitment. We here at Turnbuckle Turmoil have been doing this show for, I think we started in late 2011, and we have well over 1,300 interviews, and our show has been tweaked and refined throughout the years, and there's some extracurricular activities that we do. Especially on our website, and one of those activities is the weekly rankings of Northwest wrestlers. Now, as you know, the number one wrestler who is ranked that week gets a fruit pie, and I'm always the one that, you know, buys the fruit pies. I've even been accused by Y period T period Jones of giving him a stale fruit pie. Wow. My question is, how much did it mean to you to get a number one ranking on Turnbuckle Turmoil and be personally delivered a fruit pie? That's what I'm getting at.
That was something special. I didn't even know there was a vote going on for that, or I may have stuffed the ballot to make sure that I got that fruit pie. Maybe I could have got YT's stale one if he's going to whine about it. Yeah, no, that was quite the honor, and I thank the you or the voters or however that works out. I'm not really sure, but I mean it's just a conglomeration of, you know, putting in the work and, you know, finding out that people are entertained by this silly thing I call wrestling. So,
well, there's really no voting involved. It's just kind of off the top of my head from what I see in that week's action when I travel to the wrestling shows. And you yourself may have captured this number one ranking because I caught a ding-dong that you threw.
Yeah, bribery really seems to help. I mean, it just seemed like a funny little shtick when I first came up with the idea, but now I have promoters telling me, make sure you bring ding-dongs. We have a lot of kids in our crowd, and they love that. So I get told that a lot of times. Yvonne specifically asks me to hand-deliver her a ding-dong at almost every CPW show, and usually I forget, but then she yells at me backstage, and I give her one out of my personal stash. So it seems to work itself out, but yeah, that was just a one-off that randomly just stuck around. I just thought it sounded funny. Throw ding-dongs.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Jack, when were you first aware that there was an entity out there called Turnbuckle Turmoil? Who first mentioned this to you and that you may look into this website or radio show?
It was probably Seds a few years ago, and I know not that long ago you guys had him on as well. So I think it was him. It was probably a few years back. And otherwise, I just hear a few of the fellas in the locker room talking about it. And, you know, so it was one of those things, like, I guess I could go check this out. I didn't even know there were, you know, podcasts in the area for the wrestling community. So that was kind of neat to find out. I've never really been a big podcast guy, so it's interesting to be on one, quite frankly.
Oh, okay. Well, now this week's number one ranked wrestler and fruit pie winner was Sunny Days.
Ooh.
And she got that because there's a video out there of a wrestling match that she attended in Alaska, where a wrestler jumped off a school bus, and if you look closely, you can see her in the driver's seat.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I think you might be able to see this video on her webpage, maybe. Yes. That's why she was ranked number one. Yes. She got that number one ranking just because I was amazed that she was in the driver's seat and she was looking out the window and the wrestler jumped from the top of the bus. Yes.
Oh, no. It's just those little things that catch you off guard. That's what gets you.
Well, Jack, are you familiar with the wrestling organization named Shakara and the wrestler named Sugar Dunkerton?
Shakara, yes. Sugar Dunkerton, no.
Oh, okay. He sometimes comes to the ring dribbling basketballs like the Harlem Globetrotters.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Okay. Well, Jack, you mentioned AJ Styles earlier. Were you also a fan of Jimmy Wang Yang and Eric Young?
Isn't he still wrestling? I definitely got into the TNA of like the 2004, 2005 era. So I would watch those guys over there before they came over here. Jimmy Wang Yang, I only remember for like a hot minute just being over for his moonsault to a standing opponent for like 3 weeks. I don't remember too much about him other than that, honestly. But no, Eric Young and the whole Sanity thing, I'm a fan of that, like most people will probably say, more of the NXT version than the WWE's version, as they tend to twist things around to their own needs and stuff like that.
Well, Jimmy Wang Yang kind of had the Oriental redneck stick. If you think of rednecks at honky tonk bars, he kind of was one of the first one to wear cowboy boots. And I remember Eric Young trying on a turkey suit at Thanksgiving. Turkey suit. Because he lost a match.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Okay. Well, Jack, I got one last question for you. And that is, have you ever been asked to dance in the ring like Rikishi Fatu?
You know, I haven't. it's not a pleasant scene to watch me butcher the art of dance. That's not something I'm super talented in the fact of, but anything for a laugh. So I'm not saying it's never going to happen. It's just may not be nearly as coordinated and functional as Rikishi himself.
Oh, okay. Well, if given the chance and you were requested to put on the dance shades, but would you dance with Sunny Days and Pa Moonshine at the same time in the ring? I would pay huge money to see that.
Oh, I'm sure that could be arranged.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Jack, it's been good talking with you. I know you were a real trooper to hang in there and answer some questions that might not have been submitted to you. You did very well.
Well, thank you.
And, I would consider it pretty much an honor to have you back on the show, perhaps with that mysterious character, the llama. Maybe I can talk to Sign Guy and arrange that.
Yeah, maybe if we can find out what pasture he roams in and whether or not he's available for interviews and such.
Wow, okay, all right. All right, well, Jack, it's been a pleasure. And good luck with the rest of the day, and enjoy that sunshine.
Will do.
Okay, thank you. Folks,
thank you.
If you're out there and you're traveling, try to see Jack the Snack in action. Very worth your time. Okay, thank you.
Once a man is left, you smoke like your grandmother.
200 days are down, a death so end in view. A shot of fireball, one reason turned to screw. A 40 ounce of steel and silver and the ice go through. I'm so bored, I'm doing nothing, but I got nothing to do. So pour us up the Boilermakers, ask around if there any system. Pour us up the Boilermakers, time to knock them back.